ओमज्ञानति मिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं। वंदेहं श्री गुरु श्री युतपदकमलं श्री गुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्री रूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं सात्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ओम विष्णुपादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण एंड a very warm welcome to everyone on this program. I am very happy and honored to be a part of this program today. And thank you Ananda Krishna and Rajiv for your organizing this program and inviting me. So I'll begin with a few words as Ananda Krishna has asked. The topic is business with a higher purpose. And naturally, we will be giving some kind of a Vedic or a devotional perspective to this whole topic. The first thing that I want to say is that business is generally associated with earning money, with the creation of wealth. And if you ask anyone why he or she does a business or a job, they'll say it's because they need money. And that's the most common reason why this is done. And certainly there is logic in it. There is validity in it. If there is enough money, perhaps people wouldn't need to do such economic activity. So economic activity is very, very important for us. It is a source of material sustenance for human society as a whole. The idea that money is at the core of our material existence is an important idea. By money, I don't mean only currency, but I mean wealth in general. And in the Vedic understanding, money or wealth is considered divine, like everything else. Not in the sense that everything, including money, is God, but in the sense that there is a very deep, intimate connection to God. Because all of these things ultimately belong to God, they come from God, and therefore they must be used in the service of God. So spirituality consists in trying to understand what everything is connected to ultimately. Who is that person to whom everything is connected by virtue of that person being the origin of everything? So in Vedic culture we refer to the personification of the goddess of wealth as Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. And we find in India or anywhere those who follow the larger Hindu culture that they revere Lakshmi, and many times you will see the phrase Shubh Labh or they worship Lakshmi in isolation. The founder Acharya of the Hare Krishna movement of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, used to say that it is not proper to worship Lakshmi alone, because Lakshmi, being the personification of wealth, is divine. But unless wealth is used in the service of He who is ultimately the proprietor of everything, that wealth is liable to being misused. And then there are enormous problems that result from that. So therefore, when we speak of wealth or money, we have to see the inherent or underlying divinity in wealth and see that Lakshmi Devi is the consort of Lord Narayan or of Lord Krishna. And therefore, just as she is serving There's no internet. It's got disconnected. Hare Krishna, am I back? Yeah, I'm sorry. There was some... Yeah. Yes. So, Lakshmi Devi is the eternal consort of Lord Narayan or Lord Krishna, and therefore her entire existence is for serving Lord Krishna or Lord Narayan. And similarly, for ones who worship Lakshmi Devi independent of her consort, of her Lord and Master, Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, that is considered improper. So therefore, for those involved in the earning of wealth and in the spending of wealth, certainly this concept is very important. And because it is business activity that earns wealth, it is very important for anyone who is in the field of generating income or generating wealth to keep this in mind, that wealth has a divine purpose. It has to be used ultimately in the service of the Supreme Lord. And that is the perfection of our generation of wealth. Of course, generation of wealth is only the middle stage. There is a stage prior to that, and there is a stage after that. The stage prior to earning of wealth is the motivation that one has for earning, for the business, for that economic activity. And the stage that is after the earning of wealth is the issue of dealing with the results of that business or that creation of wealth. In other words, how does one deal with that wealth? How does one spend it? So the motivation for our work, our economic activity or any other activity for that matter. Second is the process of creating it, in this case is business. So generating, the process of generating that wealth, the way in which we earn the money. And third is how we spend it. So these are the three factors that we keep in mind. And from the point of view of the Bhagavad Gita, we utilize that one spectacular tool which can be used to understand and analyze anything and everything in the creation, and that is the three modes of material nature: the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. So for each of these three stages, the motivation for earning, the process of earning, and the spending of that wealth or dealing with the fruits of that work, all of these three can be seen in the context of the three modes of material nature. And ultimately, even beyond the mode of goodness, there is what is called the spiritual platform, which we as devotees of Krishna refer to as the Krishna conscious platform, the transcendental platform, in which everything becomes completely spiritualized: the motivation, the process, and the dealing with the fruits or the spending of the wealth that one earns from business. So this is the broad framework, and ultimately the highest conception of the wealth and the generation utilization of wealth is that it has to be done in this consciousness, in this spirit, that one is doing it for the service of Lord Krishna. Spiritual activity is not merely something that has to be done sitting under a tree in a solitary place. It is not something that merely is done in an ashram or a hermitage or in some holy place. It is a 24/7 state of mind and state of activity. Whatever it is that one does, whether as a businessman, whether as a student or anything else, the idea is to dovetail what we are doing in Krishna consciousness. So this is the broad framework for our topic today, business with a higher purpose. So that higher purpose is ultimately to be motivated to serve Krishna in the context of our business, to serve Krishna through our business. Then earning money, the process has to be such that it is in line with Lord Krishna's instructions in the various scriptures, and then spending that money for his pleasure, for his service. So this is in short the framework for the topic business with a higher purpose. So I think we'll stop here because this is largely going to be an interactive session. Yes? Okay, thank you. Yeah, he was Ramdas Kapoor, actually, yeah. Ramdas Kapoor, yeah. So, this goes back to almost 500 years. There was this wealthy merchant from Punjab who was in a boat going towards Agra to sell his merchandise. Somehow or the other, when he was in the Yamuna, in Vrindavan, the boat got stuck in the sand. And so he was in anxiety. He came ashore and he saw this cowherd boy and asked him for help. And the cowherd boy asked him to go and meet a saint who was sitting atop a nearby hill. And so this Ramdas Kapoor went there and explained his problem and begged for the mercy of the saint so that he could be relieved of his problem. So the saint, who was actually Sanatan Goswami, one of our very important acharyas and one of the foremost disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he said, well, I'm just an old man, I'm a renounced monk, I am a beggar, I have nothing here, but if you beg or if you ask Madan Mohan, referring to the deity of Krishna called Madan Mohan, who is nearby under the tree, then he will help you. So the merchant Ramdas Kapoor did that, and very soon there was a thunderstorm, there was a lot of rain, and there was a lot of water that flowed through the Yamuna, and then that released the boat from the sandbank. So the merchant went on to Agra, he sold all his merchandise and made a handsome profit. And he was so grateful for what had happened that on his way back, he halted once again at Vrindavan and he came to meet Srila Sanatan Goswami and offered this wealth to him. And Sanatan Goswami says, well, I am a renounced monk, so I have no need for money personally, but if you want to give it, then why don't you build a grand temple for my deity, Madan Mohan? And this is precisely what this Ramdas Kapoor did. So he built a very grand structure for Madan Mohan. So of course in later years there were substantial modifications that happened to that temple structure. So this is a very famous episode that happened, and that's the history of how the Madan Mohan temple, which is the first temple in Vrindavan, then actually came up. So it goes to show the spirit of a businessman like Ramdas Kapoor. He gave every penny of his profit to Sanatan Goswami to build that temple, and he actually oversaw that. So the important thing is that everybody else is not in a different condition or a situation than Ramdas Kapoor was. We shouldn't think that Ramdas Kapoor was in a great crisis. His boat was stuck. And now that Madan Mohan had released him from that problem, therefore he was grateful and he was doing this act of charity. But factually, that is the situation of every single individual in the material world. We are all stuck in the sandbanks of this river of material existence. Somehow or the other, we are all stuck and in dire straits with birth, death, old age, disease, and so on and so forth. So therefore, we also have to pray to Madan Mohan to release the boat. And the boat metaphorically is the human body. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the human body is compared to a boat, which is meant to cross over the ocean of material existence. So our boat of the human body is also stuck in the sandbanks of the river of material existence. And by being stuck, I mean that we are all in material consciousness and we have forgotten the ultimate goal of our life. And therefore we see everything from a selfish point of view, including business. So we think of business as only something that is to be done for self-aggrandizement, just for my own development and pleasure. Whereas business, like any other activity as described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, has to be done only for Lord Krishna's satisfaction and pleasure. So this is the proper expression of gratitude and the right situation of a person in knowledge. Actually, there is never any smooth sailing in this material world. There is at best a temporary lull, a temporary reprieve from the effects of the storm. So the peak effects may not be perceivable at a given point in time, but one has to be sure that it's there. And one has, just as it's the lull before the storm, they say. There's a proverb like that. So when things go very smoothly, we should not become complacent. We should not think that because everything is going smoothly now, it isn't, but because we think like that, but we should be cautious that indeed the storm is coming in various ways, in more ways than we can foresee and imagine. The COVID-19 pandemic is just one glaring example in the recent times. And ultimately, at the end of it all, everything is going to come to an end in terms of this body. So all that we are striving for is going to get finished. And whatever we have accumulated will be passed on to others, if it already hasn't been in the course of our lifetime. So it is one of the very basic principles of spiritual knowledge to be convinced in the true nature of this world and not to be deceived by the false semblance of happiness or peace or smooth sailing that we may think exists here. That is why hearing from, studying and understanding the Bhagavad Gita is so important, because we do not get deceived. We understand that this is, as Lord Krishna says there, a world of misery. And therefore, our attempt has to be to find a permanent solution to this. And the permanent solution is only spiritual. But because we cannot just sit and perform what is conventionally considered to be a spiritual activity, like worshipping or chanting the names of God or something all the time, 24 hours. And because we have needs, we have to maintain ourselves, our families, and so on. So we have to do all these other activities. So Krishna consciousness teaches us to dovetail every single activity that we do in Krishna's service. And then sometimes we know that there may be a time when the storm is not as strong, and sometimes it's very strong. But even if it's stormy weather, we will still sail through, even though it's challenging, because we are rooted properly in Krishna consciousness. You know, it's good that somebody is sharing or giving up a portion of his or her hard-earned wealth or inherited wealth, as it may be, to somebody else, especially in charity or something. But there are different grades of doing this. You know, I mentioned earlier the three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. So when we speak of giving up our wealth for some purpose, you know, one can analyze that also in terms of these modes. So when one is in the mode of ignorance, the tamasic mode, then one's motivation for earning is only destructive, and the activity that one does is actually for nobody's welfare. It doesn't help anyone. It's a lose-lose situation. for those who are in the mode of passion, the rajasic, who are influenced by the rajasic rajoguna, so their motivation is selfish, and they largely look at welfare of this of themselves and their limited connections, maybe the family or something like that. Those who are in the mode of goodness, they look at wealth in terms of a duty as or as an opportunity to do good, and they look at some larger welfare. Whereas those who are actually devotees of Krishna and who understand the philosophy behind it, behind Krishna consciousness, who are motivated by the ideology or the philosophy given in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, their motivation is different from the motivation of some others that you have mentioned. An ideal devotee, businessman, would like to share as much as is realistically possible given his or her circumstances for the service of Lord Krishna in different ways. Those who are not so conscious of Krishna may do it for other purposes. They will have selfish motivations mixed in that, and because of their lack of philosophical clarity, because of the lack of proper understanding of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, they may give up their wealth here and there, usually out of some sense of piety, say giving to some temple or some deity or something. So obviously there's a mixture of a mode of goodness there, because they believe in some kind of authority, some divinity. But in most cases, their understanding may not be so clear as to what they are doing. And also often their motivations may be mixed. For example, someone may go to, since you mentioned Tirupati, you know, he may go and strike a deal with Balaji, you know. It's quite common to find people doing that. And since we are on the topic, a little joke comes to mind, that there was this one businessman who went to Lord Balaji in Tirupati, and he struck a deal with him. He said, look, I'm about to negotiate for a very big contract, and it's a big contract, maybe worth 20 lakh rupees or something, whatever, and I stand to gain a profit of 20 lakhs or something like that. So whatever it is, so if you make it happen for me, then I'll give you 50%. And then he goes away. And then it so happens that he clinches the deal, but the profit that he makes eventually is only 10 lakh rupees, not 20 lakh rupees. So he doesn't give the 50% as promised. So one day Balaji approaches him in his dream and said, you know, what happened? You were supposed to give me, we had a deal, you were supposed to give me 50%. So the businessman replied to Lord Balaji and said, but you anyway kept 50% aside before the profit came to me. You know, so in this way they strike deals with the Lord. I'm not saying that that is necessarily the case with everybody. Different people have their own motivations. Some are more pure-hearted, some are mixed, some are less. So it's hard to say in general. But the point is that one who understands the philosophy of Krishna consciousness properly and who is motivated properly and is inspired to do the business activity for Lord Krishna's pleasure will do it in a way that will actually be a cause of spiritual upliftment and will actually do the highest welfare to the world. So the person in the mode of good ignorance does things that are to nobody's welfare. The person in the mode of passion does things that are only for what he thinks is his own welfare. The person in the mode of goodness does something that he feels is for the larger welfare. But the actual devotee of Krishna working under bona fide guidance does things which are for the highest welfare of all. This is the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Others, each person would be at a station where he or she will be mixed. There will be some mixture of sattva, rajas, tamas, perhaps some Krishna consciousness as well. So each is a case that is separate and has to be seen individually. That kind of charity is noble work, but it is on the noble material platform. It's still material. And therefore the results will also be material. So one will obtain benefits that may be substantial in accordance with what has been, what kind of charity, etc. has been done. One will definitely reap benefits, but that will only be material. So, material philanthropy or altruism cannot yield spiritual benefits. So, it is a noble act, as I said, but one must distinguish between material acts, however noble they may be, and spiritual acts. Material acts bind us to the cycle of birth and death, whereas spiritual acts release us from the bondage of material existence. Yes, this is a challenge for everyone, including those who are on the spiritual path, because such is the nature of money that is very hard to get detached from it. Wealth, money, property, all the manifestations of wealth, they intrinsically have this property of making people attached. And once you have it, it's very difficult to give it up. Even with a spiritual bent of mind, it is very easy to once again get attached to it and start thinking that one need not give this, one can keep it for oneself, because after all one has so many needs. So this is actually a challenge for everyone in this material world, because the temptation of wanting to utilize that money for one's own purposes, and the different varieties of distractions that will come up are indeed very difficult to handle. So yes, this is a reality. The more one gets money, the more there is a tendency to deviate from the path. Many times devotees do say that I'm not doing Krishna consciousness so enthusiastically now because I want to focus on generating wealth, and I'm spending all my time earning money, and then I'll give a lot to Krishna. But the point is that if you neglect your Krishna consciousness in the course of earning your wealth, then by the time you earn your wealth, even if you do earn it, you may lose that consciousness, and you may lose that spirit for with which you started out in the first place. So it's a very tricky thing. Therefore, one has to be very firmly rooted in Krishna consciousness, and one also has to be in association of those who are similarly minded, so that in case we do get a little distracted by all the trappings of wealth, you know, the power, the prestige, the goods, and other things that come with it, it is very easy to get carried away. So one has to remain focused with the help of like-minded devotees. And of course, perform our spiritual practices very strongly. As you said, that because when you do business, you have to interact with all sorts of people. And you're out there in a world that is perhaps cutthroat, perhaps there are people with whom you can't discuss any spiritual topics, and you have to be with them because that's what the business demands. And that can drain the spiritual energies and enthusiasm of the devotee. So one has to compensate for that by spending more time in spiritual activities and in associating with devotees, so that one may remain charged. Well, nowadays we have technology, and this is how we're associating with each other right now. Even as I speak, we are all there with each other, and we can associate through the facilities that modern technology gives us, the telephone, the email, and so many other things. And at the same time, there are also opportunities for physically meeting where it's safe enough to do so. There are many devotees who do meet up, and although they take precautions, so with whatever limitations we have in our situation, we should try to get association. That's very, very important. Well, one of the principles of Krishna consciousness is that we have to try to avoid the association of non-devotees as much as possible. But obviously that is not possible completely, because for one who is earning his livelihood outside in a job or in a business, you do have to interact with people of the world. And the compulsions of business may force you to attend certain events which otherwise, as a spiritually minded person, you wouldn't like to. So I would say that first and foremost, try to minimize all such occurrences and events to the extent that is actually possible. If it is avoidable, that is the best. Only if you feel it is really not avoidable, and that the price that you will have to pay in terms of your livelihood, your source of livelihood, will be very significant, and if it is occasional, then you might take a chance and do it. But if you are taking adequate precautions by chanting your rounds nicely, by associating with the devotees before and after these events, then I guess it's something you may do very carefully, very selectively. Although ideally one has to avoid it, but as I said, we are living in a practical world, and if that is what you need to do, so be it. But then take care. Actually, the source of livelihood also has an important bearing on our consciousness. The purer the source of livelihood, the purer our consciousness. Unfortunately, today in this day and age, it is very hard to have any source of livelihood which is not affected by the contaminating influences of the world, of the material world. So whatever you do, wherever you go, you know, somehow or the other you have to interact. It's not possible. So one has to just see it in this light. See it if it's really necessary. If it's absolutely necessary and you need to do it, fine, do it. But try to see that you don't have to do it again and again. It is something that is at a reasonable interval where, you know, it's not too risky or problematic for your spiritual life. And also another point that just comes to mind, if I may, just the last point, is that if people around you, including your business associates, know what you stand for in your life, what your lifestyle and practices are, then there are many occasions when they have their events, but they will not invite you. Because, not because they don't want you to come, but because they know that you will be very uncomfortable there, and that's not the place where you would like to be. So in some cases, this may also happen. Yes, even if we don't want to wear our spirituality and spiritual beliefs on our sleeves, so to speak, while at work, we also need not hide it more than is required. If people know it in normal course of events, then that may actually serve as a shield of protection for us. It would depend on the circumstances. It would depend on who you're speaking to, whether that person is really serious about wanting to know. So it would depend on time, place, and person, and where you think that it's suitable to explain things at length, it's fine, you can go ahead and do it. But where you feel it's not appropriate in the workplace at that time, you may restrain yourself. So that is a call or a judgment that you will have to make right there, seeing the situation, balancing it all out. And I know of many, many devotees, and I'm sure you do it as well, that they even utilize their workplace to at least some degree for speaking to people about the message of Bhagavad Gita, because it happens automatically. Even if you don't actually go out of your way to do it, somehow or the other, because people know about it, know about your Krishna consciousness, they will come up to you and start talking to you about it. Because it becomes very apparent, very obvious. You don't drink tea, you don't eat meat, you don't do so many things that they do. So automatically they get to know, and they will come up and start talking sooner or later. So, bhakti is the highest motive. If one is a devotee of the Lord, one is a sincere devotee, ultimately one wants to do the business in order to facilitate one's own Krishna consciousness. Now, in order to do that, naturally, one has to be very efficient and professional in the way one runs the business. So, having bhakti as a motivation does not mean that one is neglectful of the basic ways and means that a business needs to be run in this world. One has to do what it takes. But the motivation has to be that I'm doing this as an offering to Lord Krishna. And then, after that come the other two questions: the process of earning the money, and then how we spend the money that we earn. But as far as the motivation is concerned, for a devotee of the Lord, this is how one has to see it. And yes, ultimately, people may think that I'm doing a business because I need to earn a livelihood, Yes, but why does one need to earn a livelihood? Because one wants to survive in a reasonably comfortable condition. And why does one want to live like that? Because one wants to become Krishna conscious. So if one sees that ultimate connection with Krishna, even at the back of the mind, if not at the front of the mind, I think that itself is an excellent motivation. And as far as the motivations in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness, I did briefly allude to that earlier. Yes, you're a sin. Okay, thank you, Asim. The activities that are considered spiritual, we call them Krishna conscious, which means like chanting the names of Krishna, reading and hearing and speaking his messages like Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and so on, and participating in any program that essentially involves practicing and propagating this practice, worshipping the deity of the Lord, doing anything in connection with the whole spiritual practice, all that is within the ambit of Krishna consciousness. So when one does something for that, then one gets a spiritual benefit, meaning that one gets relatively freed, one gets proportionately freed from the bondage of the birth cycle of birth and death in this world. One gets freed from the bondage of karma, of action and reaction in this world. When one performs material activities, they may be of two kinds, good or bad. So the noble acts of charity are good activities, but they are material. So one will have to take birth again. And then one will enjoy luxurious life and have material happiness because one did a lot of material good previously. If one does something very bad from a material point of view, then one will receive the result in terms of a lot of suffering and various kinds of misery, economic deprivation, and so many other things. So, materially, whether one does good or bad, the only difference is the results will be good or bad, and they will all be temporary. And once the results of the good acts have been exhausted, one is back to square one. In spiritual activities, that is not the case. With every name of Lord Krishna that you chant, with every pranam or obeisance that you offer to Lord Krishna in the temple, with every lecture or few words of the message of Bhagavad Gita that you hear, with every morsel of the sanctified food, which is Krishna prasadam, that you partake of, with every little act done for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, what you're doing is you are actually cutting the knot of material bondage. And more we do that, and the more and more that this accumulates, we will come to a point in life when we will do this wholeheartedly. We will do this with complete dedication. And by that time, we will also acquire very clear understanding of this philosophy. We will know exactly how our life should be led, what money is meant for, what business is meant for, how the money should be spent, etc., etc. And then we will be properly on the highway of spiritual life. And eventually, when we attain the perfection of that process, which is to attain pure love for Lord Krishna, then we will be released from the cycle of birth and death. No more having to take birth again in this material world. That's the idea of doing this spiritual activity. And by doing welfare activities on the spiritual platform, we also ensure that many other people get this spiritual benefit. So it's not only about me, but I share this benefit with many, many others. So I get even greater credit for that, spiritually. Yes, Karma Yoga has a few stages. At the very preliminary level of Karma Yoga, by the way, yoga means to link with God, so there has to be some detachment from material life before one can call anything yoga. Because yoga speaks of connecting with something beyond this material world. So therefore, when we speak of Karma Yoga at the lower level, we are speaking of a person becoming detached from the fruits of his own actions. But the person doesn't know to whom the fruit should be offered. It's just like, you know, you're walking on the street and you find a wallet on the street. You know, so you don't know to whom it belongs. So, but you just walk away thinking it's not mine. Okay, so it's a kind of a renunciation, it's a kind of a detachment from the fruits of one's act, of whatever we do. The second is, if someone says, well, that's somebody's wallet and he doesn't seem to be around, so let me pick it up and enjoy the money that's there. So he picks up the wallet and takes the money and spends it for himself. So that's like somebody who is not a yogi, who is a bhogi. A bhogi is one who enjoys this material world. But ultimately, everything is the property of Lord Krishna. So when I take the property of Lord Krishna without his permission, without his blessings, and use it for purposes that have no connection with him, then that is like the person who finds this wallet on the street, doesn't know whom it belongs to, just picks it up and enjoys the money there. The third is the person who picks up the wallet and looks at some identification card or something and then traces out the person who actually owns it and returns it to him. So that is the devotee. That is the genuine spiritualist. That is when the Karma Yoga transforms into Bhakti Yoga. So at that stage of Karma Yoga, one understands that the fruits of my actions are not meant for me. Yes, that's true. But who is it meant for? It's meant for Lord Krishna. It's meant for his pleasure. So now in my understanding of Karma Yoga, I have evolved from the lower stage to the higher stage. In both stages, the Karma Yogi is detached from the fruits of his actions. But in the first stage, he is not aware as to who the actual beneficiary of those fruits is. In the higher stage, he becomes aware. And at that time, then he starts sharing the fruits of his activities, or offering a part of the fruits of his activities to Lord Krishna. So that is the higher stage of Karma Yoga. And then when one goes further, one understands that actually everything I do should be for Lord Krishna. It's not that I should share only a part of the fruit of my action. So I should do everything for him. And that's when the question of offering the fruits disappears. You offer the action itself. So everything you do is meant for Him, for Lord Krishna. So that is the stage of Bhakti Yoga. Right? So one has to move from at least to the level of Karma Yoga and then to this level. But one need not go through the entire process. One can directly come to Bhakti Yoga in the association of devotees. Okay? Hare Krishna. Hare. Right. It's a question of what motivates us to do it. What is motivating us to do a business or to do anything else? Srila Prabhupada explains that generally a person is motivated by some desire to, let's say, benefit himself or his family. So the driving force that compels him or impels him to do a certain activity like a business or a profession or a job is that he wants to get the fruits of that labor, which is the money that he earns at the end of the month, and then use it for the pleasure of his family. So that force which drives an ordinary person in the world to earn money for the family or for prestige or for whatever reason, it's also a kind of a rasa. Prabhupada uses the term rasa. It's a kind of a taste. It's a kind of an impetus. It's a kind of a pleasure, a kind of a driving force that impels us to do this. So we have some purpose behind our action. We keep our family in mind, or we keep our prestige in mind, or we keep the, you know, some objects of enjoyment in mind, or whatever it is. But we have something behind us that drives us to do what we do. So we may have our driving forces based on the modes of ignorance, passion and goodness, but as devotees, if our driving force is that we want to please Krishna and we want to improve in our Krishna consciousness, then that can be the strongest. Of course, we know that as householders, perhaps now you have to earn a business to maintain the family. So when you are looking for money, you're looking for money so that you can maintain your family, so that you can do your Krishna consciousness peacefully, and so that you can become a pure devotee. And all your family members can become pure devotees. So at the end of the reasoning, it's ultimately you want to do it for Krishna consciousness. So even though you may have the nature of a businessman or you may not, a businessman by nature will be driven by his own swabhav or nature to do that business activity. Because it's his nature. Like Arjuna was a kshatriya, a warrior. So his nature was to fight. And since he was withdrawing from the fight, from the battle, Krishna cautioned him that even if he did withdraw at this time, at some point in the future, you know, his nature as a warrior would drive him into some other kind of a battle somewhere else. So he might as well fight for Krishna's satisfaction. So similarly, if somebody has the nature of doing business, he will do business anyway. He will do it in some way or the other. And if that business is required to earn money to maintain the family, to become Krishna conscious, then that is the perfect dovetailing of the nature of a businessman in Krishna's service. So that can be the highest motivation at the end of the day. Keeping Krishna in the center, keeping Krishna in mind when one does that. Yes, yes, we can hear you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Not at all. There are certain traits which are required to do business. If anyone wants to do business, he must have those traits. But those traits do not include being exploitative or being deceptive or being cruel or cheating or something like that. Yes. Somebody may become successful in business by doing all of these things. But the devotee rejects these unfavorable or undesirable traits and adopts only those traits of business that are necessary to progress in the business field. One thing that is important is that if a person who doesn't have an aptitude for business tries to do business, he will not succeed, even if he's a devotee. Maybe he does if Krishna is really merciful to him. But generally, if a devotee wants to do a business, he must try to get himself well acquainted with what it needs to do business in this world. Inasmuch as if someone wants to be an engineer, he has to make himself acquainted well and train himself up as to what it takes to be an engineer or a doctor or anything else in this world. So the basic traits of what it needs to be a businessman, that one must have. And if that involves sometimes being a little, shall we say, assertive, I wouldn't say aggressive, but I will say assertive, then so be it. Because sometimes if one is not so, then there is a chance that somebody else may take undue advantage of us. So as a devotee businessman, one will definitely not cheat or exploit others, but one has every right and indeed a duty to also defend oneself from being cheated and exploited by others who may be unscrupulous and ruthless. So therefore the businessman devotee has also to be very sharp, also to be wise to the ways of this world in order to be successful in business, and at the same time he also has to run the business according to certain values which are very noble, and he has to be driven ultimately by spiritual motivation, the motivation to please Krishna and the spiritual master and the devotees. Thank you. Well, I did cover answers to parts of your questions in the beginning. Well, actually, it is natural that somebody who is a busy businessman will not find so much time to personally employ his money in Krishna's service directly and do everything. To some degree, to a large degree, of course, he will, but it may not always be possible because he has his responsibilities at work and so on. And however, if one is connected to sincere devotees of the Lord and one sees wonderful examples in front of us, then definitely there are avenues open where one can share one's wealth in a way that will be helpful for ourselves as well as for the world at large, because it will be used for Krishna conscious purposes, for the highest welfare work. So there will always be opportunities, but at the same time you have made an important point that there are many people who want to give but they are not confident about where they should give, because they're not sure whether the place they give to is the right place or not. So when you are connected to genuine devotees, then you understand what they are doing, how they do it, you will get confidence, and then you share your wealth now with your newly acquired confidence and understanding. Maybe it depends on the person. You know, it depends on where the person you're speaking to is at, what his level of understanding is, what his consciousness is, what drives him. These are the things that we need to see. Maybe some people will be motivated by one thing, somebody else by another thing. So it is a question of judgment that one must see. At the end of the day, one may dovetail his tendencies into Lord Krishna's service in some way or the other, and in this way facilitate that person's elevation in spiritual understanding. You see, when we go to people to encourage them to give in charity for Krishna consciousness, we are not only going there to take money from that person, we are also going, very importantly, to engage that person in Krishna's service, by which that person will be enormously benefited and so many others will also be greatly benefited. So we can keep this in mind, at the back of our mind, that we are not going only to take, we are actually going to give. We are giving them an opportunity to serve Krishna, which is the most precious thing in life, the opportunity to serve Lord Krishna. So initially, for want of spiritual understanding, they may not be able to relate to such things, to this language, even if you tell them. But at least at the back of our mind, we should have that in in mind. And if they're willing to listen, we can present this idea to them. And look, the idea is that, you know, when you dovetail your money for something higher, then it's a cause of great happiness and satisfaction and success for you and for so many other people. Sure. Well, the first thing is better to not earn your money in an adharmic way, but somehow or the other, if it has been at a time when you were not aware of what proper ways of earning are, and you were not exposed to spiritual knowledge, and therefore you earned it in a way that is not correct, then that money should then be given to Lord Krishna for Lord Krishna's use. That otherwise we will have to bear the karmic consequences of retaining that funds and enjoying benefits from it. So if we offer it to Lord Krishna, then that is much better. Wisely, under proper advice from the proper person. And one should not succumb to greed and fall prey to very risky business propositions or risky our prospects of very high returns in a very short time. One has to be very cautious about these things. So one has to be very careful before investing money anywhere. I know of any number of people, devotees and non-devotees, who have invested money in a hurry without thinking things through, and the result has not been good for them. In some cases they have lost all their money. In some cases they have lost a very, very significant amount of their money. All because they did not think things through and take advice from the right persons. Not everybody is expert in, you know, in a particular field. So if you want to invest in the stock market, you must have thorough knowledge of that. Otherwise, you can't go around doing something and burning your fingers. So one must do it under proper guidance, and one should not fall prey to the lure of very large and quick profits. We can rest assured that such proposals to get large and quick profits will be very dangerous. So in principle, there is no problem in investing in the market, whether it's the stock market or any other market, provided things don't violate Krishna conscious principles. For example, we will not be in speculation on the market. We will be okay with investment in the market, but not in speculation, because speculation will go against our principle of no gambling. But if it is investment, then that is fine. And if that investment is done with a long-term motive, but there is sudden changes in the market and you sell it after a very short time or something, it still would not be considered speculation. It will still be considered all right as a bona fide investment, because your intention, your motivation was long-term investment. But because of certain changes in situations, you had to take a last-minute quick decision. That is a different thing. So what is important is your initial motivation, your intention, and how you go about things. So things should be done wisely, carefully. I think Ananda Krishna, the first, you mentioned in the beginning, earn with integrity and spend wisely. Is that it? Is that what you said? Spend wisely? You use the phrase like that right in the beginning. Okay, spend with compassion, right. And invest with wisdom, you can say. Because that's very important too. Yes, and invest with wisdom. Okay. Look at the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. If you get your answer there, fine. If you don't, consult with devotees who are knowledgeable in and who will be able to offer some advice on this. Okay. Yes, you should not bite off more than you can chew. You should not eat more than you can digest. And if you try to do things that are so far beyond your financial capacity that it is unreasonable, then you end up putting yourself in enormous stress and enormous risk. And then your spiritual practices, your consciousness, your health, everything suffers. So it is just more practical and prudent to go step by step, not expecting everything to happen overnight. We have to be patient, industrious, but also patient. And step by step we go, as we progress, then we can go for bigger projects and so on. No, just a word of appreciation for what all of you are doing in trying to raise this awareness amongst people who have their own enterprises, and to create this consciousness of noble business, doing business for a higher purpose. I think you're doing human service, you're doing exceptionally good work, and it's a privilege to be associated with you and everyone else who is along with you doing this wonderful work. So I'm just happy I could be here with all of you this evening. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.